Thank you, Shauna and Paul and everyone else. It's a pleasure to be joining you tonight. And some amazing poetry read earlier there. It's just I'm always amazed at the fantastic work that people can produce in a very, very short period of time. Given the night that's in it, the day that's in it, International Women's Day, I'd like to begin with a poem that I wrote in prison. While I was in prison, I studied with the Open University, and one of the courses was called the Change and Experience of Women. And the tutor for it was a woman called Joanna McMinn, who later years went on to become the CEO of the National Women's Council of Ireland. And we became firm friends. And I'd asked her, would she be prepared to come into the prison and do sort of more informal workshops with us rather than those people who were just enrolled with the Open University, because that was a limited number. And she agreed if I would co-facilitate. And over the next 2 years, I think it was about 200 Republican prisoners engaged in the conversations, the workshops. There were a mixture of difficult conversations, a lot of laughs, and just a really, really wonderful time. So given this, as I say, the day it's in it, I'd like to dedicate this poem and many offerings to all of those women who have formed the threads of my life, especially beginning with my mother, who was a very quiet, unassuming woman, but a rock. My sister and then later friends, comrades, lovers, and more recently my daughters. The poem is called Feminists. Nicholas Copernicus, Polish astronomer, discovered that we don't inhabit an Earth-centered universe as had been firmly believed before then. At the time, he experienced much difficulty in convincing his contemporaries of the truth of his discovery. Such theories challenged what was natural and God-ordained, and a disciple of Copernicus was the worst of heretics. 4 centuries later, we still have our heretics. Now they're known as feminists. This here is a poem that I wrote last year. The National Print Museum of Ireland, along with Creative Ireland, had a competition to write a short poem, no more than 12 lines, on COVID. And I'm glad I won it. So this is, given we're still living through a pandemic, this is the poem I wrote last year. It's entitled, I Couldn't Tell Her. After he died, I wrote to his wife about his final hours. Those hours he had spent alone with me. I couldn't tell her it was her he loved, her that he wanted so much to return to hold, kiss, make love with. I just couldn't tell her that. I couldn't tell her because he couldn't speak. The stranger to me, I just happened to witness his death. Staff nurse Williams, COVID-19 ward, 13th of April, 2020. And I got the inspiration that from a friend, actually the artistic director of Cowboys Theatre, who I work along with, and who's produced most of my plays. And her sister worked, was a staff nurse in the ward. And at the very start of COVID last year, when families weren't allowed in to see their loved one in the final stages of their life, the nurses were then asked to write a note to the families of the bereaved. This is the first poem that I ever had published. It was written about 88, and it's interesting. We started poetry workshops in the prison around 87, 88. And I wrote out to Jesse Lentelling at that time, didn't know her at all. But somehow, Salmon Poetry, somebody recommended them or whatever. And I had a bit of a brass neck and just wrote to her. And she wrote back and gave us some encouragement and good advice. Put me in touch with Radon Higgins, who was just starting out at that time, and fantastic poet. And Radon actually visited me in the jail and So it's sort of come full circle that years later, when I approached Jesse to see if she'd be interested in publishing some of the poetry, a lot of which was written in the prison and others which were written after it. And thankfully she accepted. This one's called Hard Lines. Right angles and straight lines, they're everywhere. And I don't like their rigidity. Wall, ceiling, floor, straight, sharp, cold, clinically exact lines meeting in right angles. The window has 20 right angles and straight lines. The door 4, 8 if we count the spy hole. The grill 120, I've counted them. Canteen is full of them. Tables, shelves, and benches of straight lines and right angles. Well, I want twisted, crooked lines, winding, curling, meandering paths, slopes, mounds, hollows, peaks, valleys, dips, curves of land and flesh. And I want them coloured, purples, blues, greens, yellows, bright reds. No more black and white or grey uncertainty. And in different textures too, please, if you don't mind. No more choice of rough or very rough. How about fine, soft, furry, fluffy, smooth, velvet, silk? Robotic minds, administrators, bureaucrats created this world of geometric precision. Did they think it beneath themselves to apply their architectural skills to the humble toilet bowl, the only work of prison art and anarchy? One second. This year is the 40th anniversary of the 1981 hunger strike, which Sean and I took part in. One of the people who died in that hunger strike was Kieran Docherty, or Big Duck, as he was often described, because of his height. Kieran was first interned without trial as a schoolboy. He was 17 years of age. He was interned for 3 years. He wasn't the only schoolboy internee. He was released, and not that long after, was rearrested and imprisoned. And he never walked free again because he died aged 25 in hunger strike. While he was on his hunger strike, he was elected a Chactadala for the constituency of Cavan Monaghan. It didn't save his life, the same as it didn't save Bobby Sands' life. He was elected a member of Parliament, of Westminster Parliament. This is their 40th anniversary. This is called Big Duck. He was amazing, sort of. He was taller than me. He was about maybe 6'3", striking good looks, very well built. But the really thing about him, he moved almost like a cat, a large cat, like a puma or a cheetah. If anybody else had to try to walk like that, it just sort of looks stupid looking. But it worked for Doc. It was like a fluid movement. And it added to that sort of his looks and his build that gave him this fantastic physical presence. So it's called Big Duck. As teenagers new to prison, your striking good looks were envied. Your physique, admired. Your confident step, something we could never imitate. In that strange and hostile world, your physical presence gave us security. That you were little more than a boy yourself, grown to manhood rapidly. A short life as schoolboy internee, or an active service at Oakley Nahrin, gave wit to your words, though few words you spoke. Your smile gave encouragement. A nod of your head was enough to prompt compliance. Even those who incarcerated you, admired you, wanted to be like you in their dream world. When I last saw you in the prison hospital in 81, only the shell of your body remained. Your movements slower, though just as definite. Your eyes, clear as ever. And your voice, soft as before, confident, assured, steady. Lanarai. This next poem is also has a feminist theme to it. It actually arose in a conversation in one of the classes that I talked about, and it's how images can be, you know, attribute given a gender to what's feminine and masculine, which is all nonsense, of course. But this one's called Discontented Husband. Thug. Yes, you. I see through your facade. That elegant blouse clings to a breast that holds no heart. Those shapely legs and fashionable culottes pour stiletto heels into my brain. Yes, you, thug. Your carefully coloured lips smile for others, yet mouth jagged words to me. Painted eyelashes meet in a gesture of disdain. I'm dismissed with a toss of auburn locks, a flick of manicured hand. Thug, tattoo your knuckles, shave your head, wear bobbers, chew gum. That way we'll recognize you, avoid you. And by the way, thug, the dishes still aren't done. Suppose one thing in the north over the years during the conflict was how the media often handled events, and in my view, there might be a certain bias view from my standpoint, portrayed state forces in a very different way than guerrilla ones. And this poem here is called Media Heroes, and it refers to two people. One who was a guy called Brian Nelson. He was a member of a loyalist paramilitary group that was involved in the killing of the human rights lawyer Pat Finucane, and campaigns still going on to this day about the collusion between British security forces and this killing. And the other one was an RUC man, a policeman, who walked into Sinn Féin Centre and killed people. It's called Media Heroes. He was a hero, the judge, the media, and his handlers proclaimed. Nelson, not Lord, saved 217 lives, they said. But he killed two innocent Teagues. That's with a small T. The other, the RUC man, killed three in the Sinn Féin Centre. A hero under stress, they said. This one here is, I suppose at the moment, with work has changed a lot with the pandemic. But I've often thought of that thing whenever people refer to it as unemployed. Sometimes it can be a term that's used in a very derogatory way. Someone's unemployed, it's if there's something wrong with them that they haven't got gainful employment. So this is one I wrote when I was outside and unemployed, but I think busy. This is called Work. Working? Nah, still on the dole. Doing bits and pieces about the house, though. You know, a bit of renovation, put central heating in, new kitchen, new living room, new hallway, new bathroom, put new windows in, double glazing, new doors also. Did all the woodwork and tiling myself, painted and decorated the place, made a lawn front and back, planted trees, Castlewell and Goulds, 28 of them, converted the attic into a study, published a book, finished my degree, started a thesis by research, wrote a poem and a film script. No, I'm not working, I'm still on the dole. This next poem can be read as an erotic poem. It doesn't necessarily have to be. It's called Vulnerability. And I was intrigued by the difference for me only between being vulnerable to someone or something, as opposed to making yourself vulnerable for someone. And it's just called Vulnerability. Fix your eyes upon me, naked, vulnerable to a blow. Circle round me, Look for traps. There are none. Interrogate me. Question my motives. I will answer truthfully. Cut me. Watch blood ooze from armorless flesh. Hit me. See white turn to blue, black, and yellow. When you are sure I pose you no risk, come to me unclothed. Fix your eyes upon vulnerability and protect me. Encircle me with your arms, hug me. Let your eyes question me, mine will reply. With your tongue, pierce my lips, bruise me in passion. Take me into your warmth, feel complete or complimented, but not displaced. A few years ago, I used to visit a small town in the north of Italy to teach at a course that went on there. People came from different parts of the world to it. And it was lovely to be a town called Roverato. And this is just a poem about Roverato. I had some great times there and great memories and great discussions with people from Africa, Palestine, Israel, Ireland, Italy, and elsewhere. It's Roverato. Cold water from the mountain river splashes over the dam and flows under the bridge. Cars intrude upon the cobbled streets, teasing their way like anxious visitors. Graffiti scrawled under archways proclaims an end to fascism. Colorful striped flags demanding peace hang lifeless alongside beautiful window boxes. A couple appear at a balcony on the first floor. His arm reaches out to touch the flag and rearrange its folds like a young girl's frock. Her arm encircles his waist from behind and pulls him back indoors. A man cycles past, leaning into the pedals in the steep hill, while his infant male passenger sprawls in his carrier. Old women dressed in black carry fresh bread rolls home for breakfast. The town is lazy in the early morning. Its inhabitants respect silence. I think my time is nearly up, so I'll just do this other short one here. Some of you may recall three Irish people who ended up in Colombia some years ago, became known as the Colombia Three, accused of working with FARC guerrilla movement there. And I appeared at their trial. I visited Bogota on three different occasions to give evidence. It's just called Bogota, Colombia. Buttered cars and trucks, too many or too close, vibrate the hotel walls in downtown Bogota. Between cotton sheets, I lie awake in plush accommodation. Body clock at home in Ireland, at the breakfast table. Hotel sounds are much the same the world over. Like prison sounds, they echo the lives of captured humanity. That's it. Thank you.